Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Wow, it seems so long since we've been on the air, as we decided to take a hiatus, and we took off last Thursday leading into the Memorial Day weekend. Good thing, too, as I noticed the social media world of franchising appeared to be dead in the water. I guess the coming off the IFA Legal Symposium in D.C., the IFA Multi-Unit Conference in Sin City, and the National Restaurant Show in Chi-Town wore everyone out. Well, the Legal Eagle franchise series is behind us. I mean, what a fabulous, tremendous series it was. We started off with franchisee attorney Michael Webster, and we discussed the franchisee associations and Michael's involvement with the International Association of Franchisees and Dealers, the IAFD. I know I learned a couple of things about franchisee associations, and it was quite an interesting show. The following week, we had franchise attorney Lane Fisher on the show. And as we know, Lane is quite active at the IFA as well on the executive board. And he talked a little bit about the UNCONference that took place up in Utah. But our discussion focused primarily on FPRs, franchise performance representations, and how to utilize them effectively. That was definitely an enlightening segment of Franchise Today. Then I was joined the following week by another franchise attorney, Warren Lee Lewis. And as you may recall, as we've talked about on Franchise Today and as I've written about on my blog site at fmdpro.com, Warren is the author of the Franchise Seller's Handbook. And we use that handbook to dive into franchise sales best practices on my segment with Warren. And it was great discussing the franchise sales do's and don'ts from Warren's perspective, and we pulled apart that chapter of his book, and it was just a fabulous experience. And then the last week of the show, we had franchise attorney Leslie Curran of Play Cook, who was on the show. We discussed the pros and cons of franchisors utilizing franchise brokers, and she really provided us some tremendous insight on using franchise brokers, and of course, you know, it's basically a subject that many shy away from and don't want to discuss, but she did a great job providing us some insight into franchise brokers. And there's a lot of, you know, pros and cons. A lot of people think, oh, Paul, there he is again on the soapbox about the negatives with franchise brokers, but she pointed out a lot of positives, and I agree there are positives. It's just like anything else. Understand your strategy before getting into a relationship. Leslie also provided us some insight into the recently concluded IFA Legal Symposium in Washington, where she was an active participant. As well, she gave us some insight into the Women's Franchise Network. And I really have a very, very strong opinion about the Women's Franchise Network. And it's great, a great organization. It's a great part of franchising. So it's something that you need to look at. Each segment of the franchise, Legal Eagle franchise series, is available on demand at www.blogtalkradio.com/franchise today. We're also in the process of putting together CDs of the entire series, and we'll also make the entire series downloadable. So stay tuned for some more details. Again, I'd like to take a moment to thank my co-producer, the Legal Eagle franchise series, Joe Caruso. Thanks, Joe. I know you're listening out there. Without Joe, the series would not have been a success. There's no doubt. Joe's now working on putting together a two-part franchise finance series that will air with our next episode, June 10th and then the 17th. More details to come, so pay attention to our social media efforts within the franchise community. Today, I'm joined by Nancy Weingartner, the executive editor at Franchise Times. Nancy and I will focus our attention today on Franchise Times and how it has evolved into a leading franchise publication. In addition, Nancy will provide us some of her thoughts on franchising yesterday and what she thinks is on the horizon in the future. You know, as I mentioned, you know, Leslie Kern talked about the Women's Franchise Network, and I recently wrote an article on Franchise Essential site, and I had just finished reading an interesting article about female entrepreneurs, and it made me wonder how many franchisors have specifically targeted female entrepreneurs as franchise candidates. Even those man-in-a-van franchises could probably benefit by an influx of female franchisees. You know, maybe a paradigm shift is in order. It's an interesting proposition to ponder. Leslie, as I said, provided us some insight on the Women's Franchise Network. Of course, we know that group is mostly comprised of female franchise professionals within, you know, the upper ranks of franchise organizations or at firms providing services to franchisors, and is a fabulous wealth of talent for sure. And I'm guessing that there are probably some female franchisees within the group, although I think that number might be relatively low. I know what, you know, I sometimes stop and think about what the discussions would entail at a women's franchisee network meeting. I mean, I envision discussions about improving systems and processes as opposed to the rants and raves about lack of support and other blaming on the franchisor issues, as is typical in many predominantly male franchisee meetings. I know that may not be fair to say, but I can only go by what I've witnessed over the years. And please, guys, hey, don't bombard me with phone calls and emails saying I'm taking the female side again. I just think when it comes down to the foundation of franchising and it being built upon relationships, you know, what gender is really better at relationships, male or female? No doubt female. And what gender pays more attention to detail? I cast my vote for the female persuasion that way. And what gender is more apt to communicate and share information? Well, let's just call it unanimous, female once again. So my question is, are female franchise candidates the smart choice for growth? Or maybe it should be the obvious choice. Anyway, yesterday was the premiere of Franchise News Radio. It airs live every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And the show is only 30 minutes long as we focus on franchise news within print and online publications, as well as information posted within the various aspects of social media, including LinkedIn discussions. And as I said, we will air the show live every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Central and 8 a.m. Eastern Time. Oh, and franchise news radio shows, like Franchise Today shows, are available on demand. Except for the Franchise News Radio, you need to go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Franchise News Radio. We had a little difficulty yesterday with the audio in the on-demand, and that's being corrected, and we'll tweet out and post on social media when that will be available, probably be in the next day or so. You can also stay tuned for updates about Franchise News Radio on Twitter at Fran News Radio. Well, today's guest is no stranger to the franchise community. Many like me reach out to her online and try to garner some time with her at franchise events, only to be caught up in the crowds that surround her, all wanting a shot at seeing their names and brand in print. I have to say that I'm right there with them. Nancy Weingartner has been the editor of Franchise Times for the past 8 years, and is a contributing editor since it changed hands from Cranes to its current ownership, Franchise Times Corporation, in 1999. She was previously the editor of Continental Franchise Review, a newsletter based in Denver that covered franchising, and the managing editor of the Daily Californian in San Diego, an impressive resume indeed. Nancy, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I remember the Continental Franchise Review. I used to get it in the mail and anxiously await it. Times have sure changed since everything is going online a lot.
Yeah, well, I mean, it used to be the only game in town, and look how many outlets there are now for franchise news. So
I know
things have changed rapidly.
Yeah, it definitely has changed. You know, first, without going any further, I'd like to thank you for participating in Franchise News Radio. As the listeners found out yesterday, we will regularly preview upcoming issues of Franchise Times on Franchise News Radio. In fact, Nancy provided me a snapshot of what to look for in the June-July issue of Franchise Times, and I shared the same with yesterday's listeners. And you know what? Let's do it again right now. So, cover story in Franchise Times' June-July issue features the golden arches of McDonald's. Years ago, founder Ray Kroc referred to the company as a three-legged stool with corporate franchisees and suppliers, all necessary for a strong base. Franchise Times profiled a representative from each of the three legs, including Jan Fields, the first woman to hold the title of president of McDonald's USA. Also in the June-July issue, the Franchise Times Summer Spectacular looks at franchises that require the great outdoors in which to thrive, such as outdoor fitness franchises and children's sports. They also looked at how franchises are using NASCAR to build their brand. And, boy, this is right up my alley. Sandwiches are hot right now, and what Italian doesn't like to eat? And they're hot. It's summertime, and Franchise Times overview on the industry looks at how catering adds to the bottom line. They've even included a Name That Sandwich quiz. I need to take that quiz, definitely. So that's Franchise Times, the leading publication in franchising today. If you've yet to subscribe, I highly recommend you visit them online at www.franchisetimes.com. You can preview the June-July issue, but don't stop there. Be sure to subscribe today. Right there in the upper left-hand corner, you'll be able to subscribe. So, Nancy, what's the first question everyone asks you as soon as they hear what you do?
They always say, what is the hot franchise right now? What should I be looking at? And it's one of those questions that I think anybody that mentions they're in franchising gets, and it's a tough one to answer. So, and it's the funny thing, too, is your mind goes blank the minute somebody says, you know, what's the hot franchise right now? So we always try to hedge that question at Franchise Times because we don't want to endorse any franchise for one thing. And so we just kind of talk about segments that are hot. And nobody really ever appreciates that. They really want you to give them the $1 million, the next McDonald's out there, so they can run out and invest right now.
Right. I mean, I get that all the time. Go to a party or something like that, and they said, what is it that you do? And I said, well, you know, I'm in franchise consulting. And, of course, we've gone over this on Franchise Today. The franchise consulting vernacular is used in a lot of different ways, but I don't bother to explain that. But when they hear franchise, they hear consulting, it's the same question. What's the hottest franchise today? Or the worst part is when something was written up in an article they read that day in USA Today or saw on CNN, and they asked me specifically to comment on that particular brand. And it does. It really puts you in a difficult position, and the best thing that you can do, because we deal with so many different clients, is deflect it, hedge against it, and talk about industry segments. And, I'll tell you. And it's amazing how much inaccurate information people have out there, and of course, unless you want to sit there with them for hours upon hours and get nowhere, I guess they're left to believe that inaccurate information.
Well, exactly. We've got both Franchise Times, which our audience is more experienced franchising executives. We also have something called the Superbook, which is for people that are new coming into franchising. So we post a lot of articles on that site too about, you know, starting out in it. And it's amazing how much information you need, you know, just to make that decision. And I think the problem is people still fall in love with concepts, and they get blind to, you know, nobody wants to sit down and read the FDD. Nobody wants to, you know, have a lawyer look over the documents or call 15, 20 franchisees to see their experiences. And so you really have to approach it that way. And I think, you know, franchising, like we were saying, it's come such a long way in just in 20 years, 10 years. It's almost like a completely different industry. And yet it's not an industry because it's made up of so many different segments that it's tough to be an expert on
automotive, sure, absolutely,
to restaurants, to, you know, everything else.
Yeah. You mean to tell me that people don't like reading the FDD?
Well, when was the last time you took one to bed to keep you awake?
Couldn't sleep. That is an important document, and it's good that we can laugh about it. But it is quite an extensive document, and somebody looking to make an investment, explore an opportunity, should definitely be researching it, and definitely should be sharing it with their attorney. And I don't think it's going to get any smaller. I think the FDD will continue to expand, and of course we understand the necessity. You know, as I understand it, Franchise Times is the only magazine with a singular dedication to franchising. What I don't know, and I think many in our audience would be curious to know, is, you know, what's the Franchise Times story?
Well, it's really interesting. It was actually started as Franchise Buyer by Crane out of Chicago. And the intent was to attract people coming into franchising and to talk about what they needed to know, talk about the different systems. But the problem they found is that once you bought a franchise, you didn't really need the magazine anymore. So they didn't have that continuity that they needed for their advertisers. So they changed it to Franchise Times, looking at more of how the industry was going. I keep calling it industry. It's really not. And then it went dark. And
I do the same
thing.
Sometimes we just don't know what to
do. I know. So they stopped printing it, and the present company, which was Restaurant Finance at that time, bought the publication and changed the focus into more of a, we kind of refer to it as People Magazine for franchising. So while we've got a lot of good information in there, we really do look at a lot of the personalities. Entrepreneurs are fascinating people, and I think franchise lawyers are really interesting, although people always suspect that I'm exaggerating. But it's an interesting community of people, and so we do a little bit of having fun with things, serious articles, we cover lawsuits. So we do cover everything but out there in franchising, but our focus is always on franchise companies, franchise executives.
Right. You know, it's ironic, funny, however you want to put it, but it kind of parallels some of my own thoughts with Franchise Today, because there's so many other franchise radio broadcasts and shows that are out there that are focused on the person entering franchising, and they give ample opportunity to executives and founders to promote their franchise concept. I know a lot of them charge dearly for the right to do so. Others do it as a service. And you're right, once they become a franchisee, there's really no reason for them to listen to the show anymore. And when I looked at putting together an online format for franchising and talking about executives, I found that there really wasn't one out there that talked about the topics in franchising that are relevant and pertinent and very important to franchise executives. And over this time, you know, been exposed to some tremendous people. I mean, like you said, you find the franchise attorneys very interesting. I spent a lot of time with them through this Legal franchise series, and as much time as I've spent in franchising over the last 20 plus years, and have been exposed to the legal aspects of it, I think I might have learned more in 4 weeks than I did the last 20 years, and certainly the thousands of listeners that listen live and on demand have felt the same way, because we've gotten a lot of great comments about it, and already thinking ahead to how can we do another legal series down the road. And then, of course, with my co-producer on our series, Joe Caruso, we started talking about, you know, finance. So now we've got a finance series coming in. But, yeah, you're right. And Franchise Times does a great job, I think. And I'm not just saying this to blow smoke. I value it as an important piece of an important resource for the franchise industry, because, again, it is not a publication that's directed towards franchise candidates coming into the market. And I think it's a great publication.
Well, thank you. We work hard on it. That's good, really good to hear. There's so much always going on in franchising, too, which I think is what has kept me interested for the last 12 or 13 years. Even though you're writing about some of the same topics, they change.
Last 12 to 18 months have definitely kept us on our toes with the economy the way it is, and people scrambling and trying to figure out, you know, new strategies, stick with the old, throw out the old. What do we do? How do we integrate both together? I mean, it definitely has been a challenging time. So Franchise Times basically reinvented itself. And how do you think, how would you say it's evolved and progressed from when it made that transition or when it reinvented itself to where it is today? Where do you think the improvements have been made, and where do you see it going from here?
Well, I think the improvements is that are every issue we try to do something a little bit different. We've been working on design, trying to get it to be a little bit more sophisticated. We work on not going back to the same sources, to try to get in new sources, new voices in every issue. We try to break things out into sidebars so that we are giving tips, so that even though we might be talking about a personality, we may also give their tips on, you know, how to be successful or how they do something in particular. So we're always thinking about that reader, you know, if what do they need to know? And I think in the future we'll continue to do that too. We're looking at putting a digital edition up on the web, which is, to me, is kind of exciting because you're actually thumbing through the magazine on the web as you would read it. So you see the ads, you see, you know, the vibrant colors, everything put together in that layout, as opposed to how we do it now where you have to break it apart and you're just reading a story with a couple of pictures in it. So once we get that up and going, I think that's going to be another exciting way to read Franchise Times, because you can link directly from the ads. We can put other content in it, so if you click on a story, maybe you click on to information that wouldn't be in the magazine, that would be a side interview or another story that has to do with that, or you click back onto another website. So this whole interactive part of publishing is going to be exciting. Sometimes it makes us want to go home and pull the covers over our head. It's always seems like so much extra work when you feel like you're already, you know, putting in a lot of time. But I think it's going to be exciting for the reader to have all those different options.
Absolutely. And I've said time and time again, you know, today's consumers, today's franchise candidates, I mean, and franchise executives and just so many people out there are spending so much more time online. They're more educated. They're more sophisticated. They're more technologically advanced than ever before, that it's almost it could almost be disastrous and may even be disastrous in the future not to be online with a presence. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of franchise brands, although they are slow, and I don't know why, but franchising seems to be a little bit slower than other small business segments in embracing online activities such as social media. But, you know, hey, it's here to stay. And you're right. Being able to access other information from links within the body of the content is definitely going to be a very enticing factor for people to spend more time online. I mean, it's not a lot different than email marketing. I tell a lot of clients and a lot of people, you know, hey, it's all about the links. And that's very, very true, and I'm sure you're going to find that very true as you evolve into an online publication along with your print publication. I know a lot of times I read something in print, and they say, oh, man, I wish I was able to link right from here, and I guess that's another conversation for another day about using, you know, different readers that are electronic.
Well, I know,
Go ahead.
I was going to say I have a Kindle, and I know the problem with that when I read on airplanes is you have to shut it down, and so for some reason, we see a lot of people reading Franchise Times on airplanes. So I keep thinking we're going to still have that market because you can't always read electronically the whole trip. So you might have to.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you there. And personally, if I'm reading something of major interest, I want it in my hand and I want to read it. I know a lot of people look at me and they say, you know, you got it right there in line. Why are you printing it out? I don't know. It's something to be said about having it in your hand and reading it. And to me, there's nothing like a magazine or a newspaper or a book in your hand. That being said, if you're using it as a resource and using it for reference, it is nice having online, especially to refer back to. And it captures the people that, you know, don't want to pick up a book or magazine anymore.
Exactly. Lots of options.
Definitely. I know my wife always says, you know, if it wasn't for restrooms, I wouldn't know how to read. So she said, I don't want to see you walking in the restroom with a computer. So I need the book. I need the paper version. You know, I know Franchise Times prints stories of interest to both franchisees and franchisors. How do you balance these two different audiences, especially if you run into an article that is controversial?
Well, very delicately. We try to always present both sides. And the thing that I learned at CFR, or Continental Franchise Review, that I thought was interesting is when I first started covering franchising, I would talk to, say, the franchisor, and it made so much sense when they were talking about this legal case, and I thought, well, how could anybody disagree with that? And then I would call the franchisee and talk to them, and I would get exactly why, the other side of the story. And so for me, it always became really hard to decide, you know, who was right, who was wrong. I'm really glad I'm not a lawyer or a judge. And that's kind of what we're trying to do, is not make that assessment for you, but just to put the story out there, and then the reader can decide, you know, is it weighted against the franchisor or is it weighted against the franchisee? Because obviously in any of these stories, probably blame is on both sides. It's never usually one-sided. But we're not really trying to look at that. We're just trying to look at how that could be solved, how another system might avoid that kind of a problem. And by putting out the information, even if it's negative, I know franchise companies never really like to see anything negative about themselves, but a lot of times I don't really see it as negative so much as we all know, we all live in families, we know there's going to be conflict. People aren't going to get along all the time. But I think what it shows is how you can work these things out. And so that's really what we're trying to do in stories. And then a lot of the stories will be a case where it's a business. So what applies to the franchisor would also apply to the franchisee's business. So anything that we talk about with marketing or social networking, accounting, will really apply to both businesses, HR.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I know a lot of people in franchising are obviously very phobic about any type of negativity. I know in social media a lot of us say, oh, I don't want to be involved in something where there's going to be, you know, any negative comments. And I tell them, you know, whether you're in it or not, the conversation is occurring. I guess the key is to do whatever you possibly can on the positive side to offset the negative and minimize the possibility of any type of negativity going on out there. I guess, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to franchise best practices and doing the things right, being transparent, be up and open, be an open book, be honest, and worry more about the relationship than anything else, because I'm a firm believer in the interdependency of franchise relationships. I know one of the things I got some comments about yesterday when I signed off on Franchise News Radio was, you know, hey, franchisees, tell your franchisor you appreciate them, and franchisors, make sure to tell your franchisees you appreciate them. And I got about 7 or 8 emails throughout the course of the day and said, you know, how great those statements were. And to me, that to me is an afterthought, that it should be, that's the way it should be. And so anyway, that's my soapbox on that issue. But yeah, you're right. Negativity is difficult to deal with. Well, you know, talking about controversial subjects, what kind of deserved or undeserved criticisms on articles, let's say about a controversial subject, have you received over the course of your tenure at Franchise Times? Is there anything that stands out either way?
I think the latest criticism was in our 20 to watch. I was I thought I was making kind of an obvious joke about the fact that we had a white male coming in as the chairman of IFA, because there's only been two women the whole time. I think it's 50 years. So in 50 years there were two women and one minority. And I thought it was really obvious, and I thought I was being kind of funny to act excited about a white male heading up the IFA again. And I got so much criticism about that I insulted Dina Dwyer Owens, that I insulted Ken Walker coming in. And so I it's one of those things where, to me, it was kind of an obvious joke, but obviously it wasn't to everybody else. So I kind of learned I need to be a lot more cautious about things like that. That
wow.
Humor sells, but not a good thing. But I, in a way, it was kind of a good dialogue, because it turned out that Ken and Dina were not insulted by it. They kind of understood what I was going for. But it does make you realize how, when you put something in print, it doesn't. You can't hear the tone of voice. You couldn't hear the, you know, the sarcasm or the kidding around in voices like you can when you're carrying on a conversation. So that was probably the biggest criticism that I've gotten. I'm sure there's been,
you know,
lots of other things.
You know, it's so difficult, especially in something with in print. I mean, online it's a little bit easier. You put it out there and you read it afterwards and you say, oh, I need to change that. And
yeah.
And it's easier to do online, especially out there in social media and blogs and what have you. But I could only imagine when you get the print publication back in and you finally look at it again as your readers would look at it. And has there ever been a time where you've cringed and you said, oh, I should not have written that, or that didn't look good, or whatever the case might be? Have you ever run into anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I think every time, even though it's a monthly publication, sometimes you feel like it's a weekly, because you do all this work and then it's the last few days where you're putting headlines in, you're attaching cut lines and doing all that finessing, and, you know, things get away from you. I mean, we've misspelled names, we've renamed people, things that to a reader just seem so obvious. How could you possibly make that mistake? But when you're dealing with, you know, 75 to 100 pages, and we are a small staff, it's really easy to make those mistakes, and you just, you know, you want to put a gun to your head when you come back and you look at the magazine, because you think it's so obvious. How could you possibly have missed that? You know, or you transpose numbers, and no matter how many times you go over and check it, at some point some of those things get through.
Oh, absolutely, especially since there are so many names in franchising, and I'm talking about the brand names, that are similar.
Mm-hmm.
So just
exactly.
Typing out for the last couple of days between Franchise News Radio, Franchise Times, Franchise Today, I had to go back time after time after time and make sure I had the right, you know, phrase there and the right name there. And I'm sure you do it, you know, as well in the publication. I mean, you know, you look at, you know, there's Burger This or Burger That, or Massage
mm-hmm.
Envy, Massage Heights. And, I mean, there's so many similar names. And, of course, we know spell check and stuff are going to pick it up as correct. So, yeah, definitely have to read every word, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and now we've got, even with proofing, we're doing it the next day. It used to be we had a few days in between, so you could kind of let your eyes relax and look at it with fresh eyes. Now we're pretty much doing the final proof right after the first one goes out the door. So, yeah, it's exciting, and journalists always need deadlines. You know, we will wait around until somebody gives us a deadline, and then we crank. So. So I think we kind of sometimes need that sense of excitement. But it definitely is, it can wear and tear on you. And like I said, none of us want to make a mistake. And it's so hard when we open it up and see something, especially if it's somebody that you've written about, you really care about the story, and then you see
sure,
that you've
sure.
misspelled
well,
their name
say,
or you've gotten something wrong in it.
Yeah, I have to say, you and your staff do a great job. You put out a Class A publication every month. There's no doubt, and I know it's got to be a challenge every month, and it definitely is exciting. But, you know, let's shift a second, okay? I know you've been with executive editor at Franchise Times for the last 8 years before with the Continental Franchise Review. What originally drew you to franchising? And I guess what I'm also asking is, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. That's that proverbial tell me about yourself question.
Well, I am an Air Force brat, so I moved up or moved around the country quite a bit. And I think I've always been curious, and I like to write. So I'm actually an English major and took some journalism classes in college. And I think with franchising and business, I got a little bit of business education when I worked for the newspaper. I covered the city council, and I covered the business beat for a while. And then my husband's company got transferred to Denver from San Diego. And I just kind of stumbled on Continental Franchise Review. Janet Sparks owned it at the time. And I started writing it. It was a twice a month publication. And just short little snippets of information. And I'm really a prolific writer. I tend to write long. And I like, you know, features. And I like people stories. And it was more telephone work. It was more, you know, like I said, just short little snippets of news. And I thought at the time, I'm not sure if this is really a good fit for me. And then the magazine was bought by John Hamburger and Restaurant Finance Corp. And when I found out that it was going to turn into a magazine, I thought, well, that might be a little bit more interesting. So Janet and I helped out, you know, with the first few issues from Denver. And then later, after about a year of being a freelance writer, I was asked if I would be interested in becoming the managing editor at that time. And it just so happened that my husband's company had a branch up here. So he transferred up here, and I moved the whole family up here. So it's kind of unusual because, I mean, my husband was the breadwinner at that time, so for him to move for me was really a nice sacrifice on his part. It's worked out well. We really do like Minnesota. And from there, we just kind of, the magazine grew, and we've increased staff on it. And we also do conferences, the Restaurant Finance Conference. We do a Franchise Finance Conference. And we have another publication called Food Service News. And then the franchise or the Monitor, the Restaurant Finance Monitor, is another publication. So we do a lot out of this office in Minneapolis with just, I think we had a staff meeting today. We've got about 18 people that do everything from the print side of the business to selling ads to running conferences.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, Minnesota's a nice place. Nice place to live. And I know Minneapolis is as well. You know, I know franchise, as you mentioned about the Restaurant Franchise, Restaurant Finance Monitor, and the Finance and Development Conference. So Franchise Times, I mean, obviously, is more than an industry magazine. The way I see it, it's part of a greater franchise information media machine. You have
right.
The traditional print magazine. As you said, you have a growing online presence, looking at an e-version. You have a Japan website, but there's more. Tell me a little bit how Franchise Times kind of, what's the relationship with Franchise, with Restaurant Finance Monitor and the conferences? Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, we, as a magazine, we have our mission of going out and giving information to the franchise community, but we also use it to market the conferences, because the conferences really, especially the restaurant finance conference, is a kind of a must-attend event. And so we do a lot of marketing of that conference through Franchise Times. And actually, that is kind of a popular part of the magazine, where we do photos from different events, from our events and also from IFA. And the June issue has something from IFD. I attended that conference. And your producer, Joe Caruso, is actually on page 13. So when you get your hard copy in the mail, you'll have to look that up. So I think we want to give that information out, and finance is really one of our strengths. John Hamburger is an expert in restaurant finance, and he speaks at a lot of conferences and is quoted in a lot of articles. And so that's something that we try to be sure that we're always on the cutting edge, that we cover that in Franchise Times. The Monitor covers that especially well. And so we're looking, even though franchising isn't just restaurants, that probably is a big segment of the magazine, because that is kind of our strength. But then we also have a franchise focus every month, so that we will look at hotels, we'll look at autos, we'll look at children and family franchises. We try to cover every segment that we can, because there is so much variety in franchising.
That's very good. You know, you mentioned earlier when you were at Continental Franchise Review that it was snippets, and you didn't know if that was really the type of writing that you wanted to do. Is that, and this is a question out of left field, is that part of the reason that you don't fully embrace Twitter?
Because I'm too wordy? No, I'm starting to embrace Twitter. I'm starting to like it. The problem that I have is I want to make sure when I put something out there that I'm not doing what somebody else would do too. And so that's what we're kind of struggling is, you know, what does Franchise Times want to put out there? And the thing that I like, and it probably falls flat, is I do like humor. And so I'm always trying to think, is that something that Franchise Times is known for, where we're kind of looking at things through a different lens, trying to have some fun with things? Or do I want to put straight news out there? That's why I think with Twitter I'm having trouble deciding how often to tweet, because sometimes if you get too many tweets, I think you start to turn it off, you start to ignore it. So in Facebook,
I obviously I do. I tweet a lot and post a lot in different groups, but I'm in the middle of it day in, day out, because I manage it for quite a few companies and stuff. So I'm on their sites as well, and a lot of people don't know that. But I had that same type of trepidation going into Twitter, and somebody can go back to some of my original tweets. They were actually very frustrating tweets, like, what the hell is this? I didn't want to get up in that, hey, I had French toast for breakfast. There had to be some relevance, and it does come down to a balance. There's humor, and stuff. I mean, it represents you, so you want to be careful. I imagine you look at it from the standpoint of, you know, I'm an editor, I'm an English major, I want to make sure that it's proper. There's a lot of things, but I'll tell you, writing within 140 characters sometimes seems easy, and sometimes, God, it seems so difficult.
Well, that's the old quote about, if I'd had more time, I would have written longer. So, I mean, I would have written shorter, because it is tough to write short. You have to be concise, and that's why I think Twitter's probably is a good exercise. I know on my Facebook page once, when my dog Daisy died, I did a kind of an obituary for her, and I had to do it in four parts, and you had to start at the bottom and read up, because I couldn't figure out how to do it all in one page. So I'm still learning the finessing of social media.
Without a doubt. It's funny you mention pets and stuff. My dog Dolce has a Twitter page. Mentioned this before on the air, and it amazes me that she still gets people that contact her on a regular basis. Hey, Dolce, how are you doing? And it's like, you know, hey, me behind there, you know, it's she's not over there tweeting away herself. But anyway, it is funny. To each their own, but social media is definitely here to stay, and I find it quite enlightening at times, frustrating at times, exciting at times, and it's great. I mean, you know, when you look at social media, I mean, we're in social media right now on Blog Talk Radio. I met, you know, Joe Caruso through social media. Him and I have never met yet in person, yet speak just about every day for what seems like hours at a time. Met Michael Webster, the IAFD, you're at the IAFD. I mean, think about it. Think about how much social media has just connected us all, and it's just fascinating.
It really is, and it's a nice way to have a conversation, and it's interesting. And since we all multitask, it's probably you can listen while you're straightening up your desk or getting rid of emails. So I think it's an exciting time that we're in right now. And since franchising, so much of that is communicating. It's franchisors communicating with franchisees and knowing what the customers are thinking and the employees are thinking. So I think that is one way of really kind of opening up some exciting channels so that we're not all just kind of living in our little compartment, and we're seeing what other people are doing, how they're living, you know, what their best practices are. And I think that should bring us all closer.
I think so. You know, it's funny. I was just taking a glance at my email as you were talking and heard my little talking about my post on Franchise Essentials site about female franchise candidates. And somebody that I'm acquainted with in franchising sent me an email and said, "Are you kidding me?" It, three times he wrote, "Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?" And then he wrote another email a couple minutes later. He says, "You know, I was thinking about it." And he says, "You're right."
Well, I was impressed that you didn't say women got together and talked about shoes. So I think you're very enlightened.
90% of my clients are female. When I talk to a lot of the males in franchising, and I talk about social media and integrated marketing and what have you, they're like, "Well, you know, we'll get to that. We'll find our way. We'll you know." And it's not a lot unlike being in the car with a guy, and I'm sure you'll chuckle about this, and we get lost and we don't want to ask for directions, and we say, "Well, we'll get there." And you know, when the woman is behind the wheel, it's, "No, I want to find out exactly where I'm at. I want to get there as quickly as possible. I don't want to lose, you know, run out of gas. I don't want to get lost in the wrong part of town, etc." And it's that same thinking when it comes to something new like social media. And I'm sure it was the same thinking when the Internet was becoming popular and people kind of held back, you know, going into it. Of course, when the Internet became popular, there wasn't as many female executives in the franchise ranks as there are today. So who knows how much more they would have embraced the Internet, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
I think it's exciting.
You know, getting back
to time. Yeah, we belong to a group called the Women's Food Service Forum, which is a group of women who are trying to elevate women. And it's really exciting to see that even though we've been working on this since Susan B. Anthony, that there's still so much room for women to reach the top, to get onto boards, to serve as a CEO and the president. And all of that is changing, and so for, you know, our daughters and granddaughters, it may not even be something they could think about. But we actually still, in our August issue, cover women and minorities because it still is a little bit of a struggle to get that group recognized and to have that where you're colorblind or genderblind when you're making these decisions. And maybe we shouldn't be because, like you say, women do things differently. Men do things differently. And, you know, maybe that's not such a bad thing. as long as we all have
yeah,
the same
maybe
opportunity.
Not, and I know a lot of emphasis has been put on, you know, breaking through the glass ceiling, and there's a lot to talk about, you know, rising through the ranks in corporate America, and we're talking about, you know, female executives in franchise companies, but I really like, I mean, that's all important, and I think it's all headed in the right direction, or slower than it should be, but I also like the other side, the female entrepreneurs that bring that sense of detail, that sense of understanding relationships and communicating and sharing information to the entrepreneurial side as well. And I really think that we're going to see more females, some high-powered females, in some franchisee positions, and will probably be some very, very very, very powerful multi-unit operators down the road. And, again, that'll just be another way of rising through the ranks of an organization.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah, it would be nice to not have the discussion.
Yeah, it would be. It really shouldn't be a separate discussion, just like there shouldn't be, you know, the fact that we have something that says the Women's Franchise Network, or, you know, a woman's this or woman's that always says that there is a difference and it still requires discussion.
Right.
You know, going back to Franchise Times, you know, what's your most memorable Franchise Times franchising moment?
Oh, I have several. The most recent one was going with Dunn Brothers Coffee to Kenya to see how the coffee has grown and to meet the farmers. That was such an exciting trip, and I really like companies that get down to that kind of level where they want to know where their suppliers, where their supplies are coming from, who's growing their coffee, the way they can help them. So it's not just taking; it's actually going down and helping them with their methods and improve it. Another time
yeah,
I went with McDonald's to they took a group of journalists on a trip. So it was three countries in 4 days, and so we got to see design in Paris. We got to see a farm in outside of London, and we got to see kind of the food innovation in Germany. And to go, I mean, I had never been to Europe at that point, only to Italy a few years before. And so to go hit three countries in a short period of time, and then to talk with the other journalists and with McDonald's headquarters, that was really pretty exciting to see how they do everything behind the scenes. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I know.
I love traveling.
One of my,
I love trips.
Yeah, one of my clients, Georgina Callen O'Hara, over at the Curtain Exchange, a small franchise out of Dallas that deals in curtains and window designs and stuff. Yeah, she was just telling me recently that she went on a trip to India that actually and watched and learned more about the silk spinning process.
Oh.
I'm always fascinated when somebody gets that deep into
yeah.
their business, that most minute detail. That's just fabulous.
Oh, that's really interesting. And those were products that she was buying then?
Yes, yeah, it was products she was buying, yes. Yeah, because she does. They do all their own buying and manufacturing of product and stuff. But you know, to go that far, I wouldn't even give that a thought. You know,
mm-hmm.
but I guess understanding the process and I guess makes you a better buyer and a better manufacturer.
Well, exactly, and I think you hear so many companies being criticized because they don't know about the where the products come from, how the people are treated that make them. And so I think that is a good idea to go visit the sources and see how they do business.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was just thinking, going back to the woman about in franchising, you know, franchisors, I think, need to learn how to speak more effectively with women about franchising, especially at the franchisee level. And I think that's where women now at the franchisor level and in the upper ranks are going to have an advantage in bringing on more women into the franchisee ranks. And it's just something that I was thinking about. Anyway, you know, some folks have suggested that franchising's best days are in the past. All the great brands are sold out, and there's nothing new, exciting, or financially compelling out on the horizon. As a professional franchise observer, what do you see? What's your opinion?
I think franchising will go strong. I think there's going to always be brands out there, and I think the older brands are going to be probably reinventing themselves because the ones that have been out there for a while, their franchisees are probably getting ready to retire and either turn it over to family members if they're lucky enough to have that or just selling out. And so I think you'll be seeing a new group of people coming into franchising, either into those established brands or, like I said, just having to reinvent themselves into something new. Markets shift and things may go away. We've gone through with restaurants where we tried the meal replacement where you would go and make the meals yourself, and we've tried picking up things, you know, from grocery stores and now gas stations, you know, to take home to heat up. So there's always kind of that ebb and flow in franchising, and I think because that's something that is attracting a lot of entrepreneurs, I think there's always going to be some exciting ideas out there in franchising. It's just they need to be tested theories. They can't just be somebody, you know, having a good idea and trying to talk people into coming on board. I think that's what franchising needs to do, is you've got to prove it on your dime before you can invite investors to come in and invest their savings.
Sure. I know talking with Scott Lair and Paul Rocchio over at the IFA a month or so ago, we were talking about the IFE event in Washington, and they were telling me that there was a considerable number more franchisors from international markets that were now looking at the U.S. and Canada for their expansion, where, of course, up until the last few years, it was primarily, you know, U.S. and Canadian franchisors looking at those international markets to expand into. Well, it seems to me, and I know working with some people down in South America and Central America, that there's a lot of franchisors that have yet to test the waters here in the U.S. and Canada. And I think there's going to be a lot of progress made in those areas over the next, you know, 5 or 10 years, and certainly expect something like that to occur down South America with the 2014 World Cup and 2016 Summer Olympics being down in Brazil. Same thing, obviously, that's occurring in Vancouver now and happened in China after the Beijing Olympics. So I personally think there are some very exciting times ahead of us in franchising. What does the future hold for Franchise Times, and what can Franchise Today's audience, who, if they aren't already, should be Franchise Times subscribers, expect to see in the future?
Well, I think they can expect to see us change with the times. So whatever the new hot topics are, I think we'll be out there covering it. We try to cover as many events as we can, the legal symposiums, the IFA events, the Franchisee Association events. So I think we're always looking for ideas, and we love to get feedback. So we would love to have people give us story ideas, tell us about interesting people, tell us about their concepts. And the website has all of our emails on there, or they can email to me, Nancy W., at FranchiseTimes.com. But we really, I think we want to get more of that interactive dialogue going with people, and that's why it's hard as a magazine to get that feedback, which is why social media is pretty exciting, because you can have the conversations with readers, with people. So any ideas people have for us, we would love to hear them and what
Great.
We can do either to improve or coverage they'd like to see.
Well, you know you'll be hearing from me, right?
I hope so.
Well, Nancy, our time is running out. I told you this hour would fly by. Thanks for being my guest on Franchise Today. I really enjoyed our conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Remember to check out Franchise Times at www.franchisetimes.com. Be sure to preview the current issue, and be sure to check the box in the upper left-hand side of the screen and subscribe You know, just do it and do it today, just like Nike says, do it. So today's segment of Franchise Today will be available on demand shortly after today's show at www.blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. Be sure to tell your friends and colleagues, and don't forget to keep an eye open with social media for details on our upcoming Franchise Finance series, which starts next Thursday at 12 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, have a great day, a great weekend, and please be safe.